I want to know Jason's thoughts on all of the successor languages that have been announced you know, one of the top, you know, we don't have.
I can't believe you would bring this up, Connor. I refuse to talk about this.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 105, recorded on October 26, 2022. My name is Connor, and today I finish my interview with Jason Turner as we talk about a couple of his most recent conference talks, all of the C++ successor projects, pattern matching, and more. Anything you want to say about the power of compile time resources or the making C++ fun, safe, and accessible?
Power of compile time resources. I kind of want to think of that one. No, wait a second. I have to think. What was the other talk that I gave this year?
I don't remember. What other? I'm starting to think of the talk that I gave at CPPCon.
That was the 20. I think the one from a couple years ago or
no,
a year
I'm
ago
talking
was
2022.
Your new Constexpr mental model. I think that one might have been 2021, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. No. Okay, good. I just had to put my timeline in mental order here, right? So, yes, the power of compile time resources, I actually enter that talk by saying this might be the last talk that I give on Constexpr. And it's something like the 13th or something like that, if you look at, like, YouTube videos and conference talks and everything else. It's pretty high up there in number. But the point is, like, I think I've communicated everything I want to convince people that, like, you can move work to compile time. And there's several different ways to do that. And the more work you can move to compile time, the less runtime code you have. I mean, the obvious benefit is better performance at runtime. But then the side benefits that people don't think of, like, well, code that doesn't execute at runtime is not open to vulnerabilities. It doesn't have undefined behavior. Like, it can't. It's baked in. You have a data structure that you're accessing at runtime. It's literally the fastest, safest thing that you can possibly do because all of the limits and ranges and sizes of all the things are all known in the binary. And if you try to do something outside of that, those ranges and limits, in many cases, the compiler will just stop you if you have your warnings turned on and tell you, this is a std array of, you know, string views of 10 or whatever, and you tried to access the 11th element. I'm just going to stop you right there because I know, because I was able to statically analyze the code, that that's a bad plan. And, you know, like, but what more could we want, yeah, right?
Isn't there also I've heard this on Twitter or in a talk that you can detect UB if you make it run at compile time, basically, because it's not allowed.
Yeah, UB is not allowed at compile time. So anything, I would say pretty much any line of code being written that can be, that doesn't have to access runtime resources in some way, needs to be tested in a Constexpr context because you need to know if it has that UB in it.
Right.
And it's, you know, the downside is you basically have to move all of your code to header files today because we don't have actual support from our compilers for modules yet.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, so that one was specifically about moving JSON resources into compile time data structures and just trying to get people to think about what compile time data structures can look like. Was the goal there. So it was less like, look at these, you know, fancy tricks that you can pull, and more like, look, just look at the end result, and let's talk about that. And then my C++ on C talk, making C++ fun, safe, and accessible, it's partially a talk about making sure you're using proper tooling and setting up a correct environment. The more time I spent with this, I am a strong advocate of saying you, Connor, should be developing, and, you know, not you specifically, but since you're the one I'm talking to, should be developing in an environment where, while you're programming on your machine, all of the warnings should be enabled,
warnings should be enabled as errors. You should be having some clang-tidy analysis running in the background, like as you're typing. Most IDEs do this today anyhow. And then you need address sanitizer and UB sanitizer on your developer builds right now, because you're using the code in a way that shipped code isn't going to necessarily be used. We can't ship. You don't want to ship a binary with address sanitizer enabled. That's a bad plan. Like it's literally a bad plan. It increases the surface area of your project and makes you more vulnerable to someone trying to hack your binary, security flaws, that kind of thing, because of all the instrumentation that address sanitizer has to do. But if you, while you're developing, have all these things enabled, you're going to like immediately catch memory errors that might not find themselves until the code's been deployed on the client's site.
Right.
So you need to have it enabled today while you're typing. And so that was part of it. That's like kind of the half of it is like, how can we use the tools to teach people how to write C++? So part of the code is I put up a really bad example in Compiler Explorer, and the compiler just tells you, like, you're missing this header file. Oh, you're right. You type in the header file. Oh, you're missing this. Oh, you're right. You do this. And then the compiler can tell you, well, that's an index past the end of the, oh, you're right. And you fix that. Oh, size mismatch, type mismatch. You fix that. Okay. And as you're working your way through, just doing what the compiler tells you to do, then you get like an address sanitizer crash because you went off the end of the array and you're like, oh, well, thanks address sanitizer for catching that for me. And by the time we're done, we don't have perfect code. But just letting the tools walk us through what needed to be changed, we had code that was considerably better when we were done.
Yeah. The hard part, I think, of all this, or the hardest part, is that this stuff doesn't come for free in terms of setting it all up, which I guess we can point people to your CPP starter project.
Yeah, I really need to go back and, like, you know, check issues that are open on that.
I think I did try to use it once and then gave up. Because initially I didn't have something locally installed. And then what I think I really wanted was like the new Visual Studio. I think it's actually been around for a few years now, but they have like a dinner menu kind of like check, check, check. What do you want here? Yeah. And you can check the things, because over time, I'm sure when you started CPP starter project, it was only had a few things, but now it's basically like everything under the sun that you could possibly want. And it's like, as much as I might love all of this stuff, it's like I just found some basically working project. But then when it came time to set up clang-tidy, I think I mentioned this on my other podcast, is that I stopped working on it because I was like, I'm at the point now where I've written several hundred lines of code and I want to go clean things up. And so how do I go set up clang-tidy? Well, I got to go download this Python file and then I got to hook that in with CMake. Now I got to add CMake. And it's just, whereas other languages, that stuff kind of comes out of the box. And if we had some version of basically CPP starter project that you could, you know, on the command line, just like, you know, I think in Rust, it's called cargo or Rust up or cargo new or whatever. I remember watching you and your cousin, John,
JT.
Yeah, JT. And then like I was typing alongside and I just cried inside of how easy, like, you guys got up and running. And I got up and I was like, they even like built a fake, you know, or a real like hello world file and tests are built in. And I was just like, this is heartbreaking as like a C++, you know, someone who does it professionally. And it's like where we need, like, and the community has been asking for it for, you know, in terms of not so much build systems, but like package managers and stuff. And that story is really missing from C++. And hopefully in the future, we'll have that story.
Yeah, it is definitely takes far more steps in C++.
Yeah. But for now, people can go watch the talk and go use your starter project. Yeah. I think now we should get to what, you know, we talked about vaccines for a while, and I'm sure there's a few listeners being like, Connor, I don't care about vaccines. I want to know.
Sure, that's true. Yes.
I want to know Jason's thoughts on all of the successor languages that have been announced you know, one of the top, you know, we don't have.
I can't believe you would bring this up, Connor. I refuse to talk about this.
You know, that's what's, you know, if it's, isn't it, there's a small part that's, you know, it's very sad that CPPcast ended in general, but just that it ended right before all of this I don't want to call it drama, but obviously it's been a hot topic on Hacker News and Reddit, and there's Carbon from Google, there's CPP Front. We had Sean Baxter, who is the Circle individual. We had him on for an hour and a half, that I think was three episodes, and him talking about, you know, all his thoughts on Circle versus CPP Front versus Carbon versus, I guess, CPP Front and CPP2 are the same thing. And then there's also Jacked. Yacht.
I think Yacht, I think, is technically how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah, I have no... I've only heard of that. I haven't, you know, seen anything on Andreas Kling's streams or anything like that. Anyways, I'll turn it over to you. What, you know, the C++ community, plus at large, has been wanting to hear what Rob and Jason... We're going to at least get to hear from Jason, and Rob hopefully will get on in a later episode.
Bait and switch. You didn't tell me we were going to be talking about this.
I'm sure you have views, though. Or
I have some thoughts. What I'll say is, of all the languages that you just mentioned, mm-hmm. which ones can I actually use right now?
What? So what do we mention? CPP? I mean, and you probably mean like in a context where you're doing something other than writing Hello World.
Right.
I don't think any... Actually, I don't know about Jacked or Yacht.
Yacht is actually slowly replacing the C++ code in...
In Serenity OS, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I don't know to what extent, but that has a huge community around it for a startup language, for an actual legit, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Grassroots project. Has a lot of people working with it that you can use right now. JT, my cousin, has almost completed their, I'm thinking at least sixth NES emulator. Written entirely in Yacht.
Okay.
Not the sixth written entirely in Yacht, but their sixth. This one happens to be written in Yacht. So one of JT's hobbies is to write an NES emulator in whatever language they're learning today. So that could be Rust, JavaScript, whatever, TypeScript, C, Rust, and Yacht, definitely, at least those four.
And a little background just about JT, and I know this because you had him on episode 242 of CPPcast, and I know this because I wrote a blog. Actually, I started my blog, the Code Report blog, specifically just so I could write a blog post about having JT, or of the episode that you had with JT on CPPcast, because it was... From a programming language enthusiast point of view, absolutely awesome. JT has a ton of background with different projects and different programming languages. He's worked at Microsoft with TypeScript mm-hmm. and Rust. He has worked on a programming language called Chapel. I think he also went to the University of Colorado?
Boulder, yes, for a master's degree.
Yeah, and I think worked, I could be getting this part wrong, but like on the LLVM or Clang stuff there, potentially had some exposure to Chris Lager.
The LLVM and Clang stuff was during a short internship at Apple.
Okay, yeah.
But JT's advisor at Boulder was, I can never remember his name when I want to remember it. Jeremy Seek? Yeah, was JT's advisor in Boulder. So that then is directly related to then the TypeScript work, and then Jeremy's continued to do things like gradually typed Python and stuff since then. So yes,
yeah.
JT has had lots of exposure to programming languages and has created, at least from scratch, helped me with TypeScript,
mm-hmm.
started Rye. Are you familiar with Rye?
I thought it was RyeScript, or is it just Rye?
Or is it RyeScript? It might be RyeScript.
It was influenced by Chai. That's
which was influenced by ChaiScript.
Yeah.
But that took on a life of its own. Like JT like left the GitHub project up and walked away, and now there's like an organization around it. People are still working on it.
Wow.
And then a little toy language that didn't get very far called Minnow, and then Yacht, and yeah. Lots of programming languages.
I will link the blog post in the show notes, but they have also been on a ton of different podcasts other than CPPcast, including a bunch of Rust podcasts. And
he was Rusty Spike, right? No.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Very sad that those aren't, you can't actually access them anymore. So I've been slowly listening through all the existing Rust podcast episodes. I've gotten through a couple of podcasts, but that's not saying much because there's only like 8 episodes.
Right.
But Rusty Spike aren't hosted anymore, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, it is what it is. And they had a Twitch stream, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and you were on that Twitch stream for a conversation, right?
Yeah. So the Twitch channel, the live streaming was interviewing people who were just, it was like live interviews, kind of like this kind of thing. And I was one of them. And then Andreas Kling was one of them as well, which I think is around the start of their collaboration. Or I could have the timing off.
Interesting. So anyways, very, very cool that you have a cousin that's sort of in Rust land at the moment and you're in C++ land. And that's a very cool, whatever, artifact of the PL communities at large.
You should definitely have Andreas and JT on here to talk about Yacht.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, having JT on would be, I mean, we could probably talk for hours. We'd have a hard time. I'd have to have Bryce there to rein it in. But yeah, Andreas, his interview that you had with him on CPPcast, I thought was phenomenal. And also his just personal backstory is incredibly interesting and kind of inspiring as well. So yeah, we'll definitely put him on the list of folks. But yes, back to the hot takes from Jason that we were about to get that I went on a tangent. So Yacht is the only one that you can...
The Yacht is the only one... Well, no, that's not true. Circle, you could use and deploy in real code.
Oh, yeah. That's a full working compiler.
Yes. No... nothing personal at all to shoot, what's his name? Again, brain cramp.
Chandler?
No, the one who... Circle. Sean Baxter.
Oh, Sean Baxter.
Yes, sorry. No, I think the fact that Circle is a closed source compiler without like a company behind it was slow its adoption in a lot of places. And Carbon, as far as I know, still doesn't actually have anything to look at. Like, I'm like, well, okay, fine. I'll play with the Carbon compiler. Oh, no, wait, there isn't a Carbon compiler. Never mind. I won't play with it.
It's just a lightweight interpreter at the moment.
And then that we had
CPP front.
Yeah, CPP front, which interesting. I don't know. I still need to watch Herb's keynote on that. It's literally a tab open on my laptop right now. I haven't hit play yet. I need to do that. And then there's the one from Types. What's it called? Types? Values. Values. That's what it's called.
Oh, Val. Yeah, Val out of... It's kind of out of Adobe, but it's mostly out of Dave Abrahams,
right,
who formerly worked on Swift and formerly worked on C++.
So I think the basic, I'm not going to give any personal strong opinion here. What I'm going to say is I don't really see anything yet. Like when these languages exist, we can have another conversation. But then I will say from having my finger still on the pulse of the C++ community, even though I'm not hosting a podcast anymore, the general response on Twitter and Reddit seems to be, I just want a safer C++. Why do you all keep changing the syntax? That's the feels that I get. They don't want a new syntax.
They don't want a new syntax. Well, so when you say, why do you keep changing the syntax? Does that mean like with respect to Carbon and CPP front, which is kind of, they're having all this backward compat, but they're saying, no. We want to still live in C++. We don't want to switch to a new thing, whether that's a language or a front end or whatever you want to call CPP2. They just want a safer version of what they're currently working with.
Virtually every average C++, like the person who's out there just getting work done, that I have any conversation with or read their Twitter comments or their Reddit comments about this, they want the ability to just like put a pragma at the top of the C++ file saying, well, these things aren't allowed. We're now using the newer version of whatever, right? They just want to be able to like turn off old features that they are deemed dangerous or whatever, like point arithmetic disallowed, whatever, right? They don't want a brand new programming language. They want a simpler, safer C++ to fall out. Like pragma, disable the preprocessor. I don't know, something like that.
That's actually very close to what Sean Baxter, I mean, he's at a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Circle is the outlier here, right? Because Circle is C++, plus, 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 plus.
And he said basically that he doesn't want, you know, he thinks that any future vision, because there's all these visions attached to Carbon and attached to CPP front, is like, we are C++. We have a committee. We make design changes, whatever. We add new things to language, library. Like, we can materialize whatever future we want to materialize. We just, as a community, have to decide that that's what we want. And his sort of take was that he doesn't think that we need to switch to, you know, a whole new, you know, Google do what Google does, as he mentioned, like Google's basically an entire country, you know. If they're going to create a language, they can immediately, it will immediately be successful just if they're using it at Google, because they have so many engineers. And so, like, you know, Google can do whatever Google does, although they're not aiming it to be just a Google project. So we'll see where it goes. But he basically said is like, whatever we want as a community, we should just work towards making that happen inside of C++.
Right.
We have the power to do that. The question is just like, are we as a community going to make that happen? The other question is, does the ISO model like prohibit major changes happening?
I have no opinion on that. I've never been to a committee meeting. I've never submitted a paper. That's a slight lie. I've had my name on a couple of papers, but I didn't write them.
I thought you had been to, I recall you saying that you went to Kona.
I did.
But you never went to the meeting?
I went to Kona in 2021, bought my plane tickets and everything. Flew to Hawaii.
So you were planning on going to a committee meeting.
I was planning to go to a committee meeting, yes.
Had the world not stopped.
Yes, but it's fine. I got a lovely vacation to Hawaii with my wife.
Interesting. Interesting. So my memory does serve correctly. It's just that committee meeting that you had planned to go to never ended up happening.
Correct. So now I can still say I'm an outsider when it comes to this.
Yeah. And I should have expected that would have been your general response, is like, I'll have an opinion when I can use things. It's because that's typically been your take on all new C++ features, is that you usually don't start poking around and making, you know, C++ weekly video until something has actually been added to the standard and you can actually play around with it in a compiler.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you'll start looking at revision R3 of some paper and be like, oh, look what's neat, what's coming. And then you'll make a video about it. And then sure enough, half a year later when it gets put in, they'll have, you know, drastically changed the feature, and your take has always been, you know, what value am I giving if I'm covering some future feature that is not actually concretized yet? Because I'm just going to be not misinforming. You'll be informing at some temporary state of some feature.
It's probably about 3 years ago. I pretty much made it a hard and fast rule that I'm not going to cover something unless I can demo it in a live compiler today.
Yeah. You probably save quite a bit of time making that like a hard and fast rule for yourself, because a lot of podcast drama is like, oh, we got to talk about this feature that's going to go through 7 revisions and it'll take, you know, a decade or 2 cycles to get in. Whereas your version, you just wait until it's actually finalized. And
I also think I save a lot of mental capacity, because I never have to say, wait, was that in the paper version or was that in the released version or whatever? Nope, don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, literally, was it last episode? I was asking Bryce, because he just gave a talk. And he was focused on top 3 things to look forward to. And one of them was pattern matching. And I had sort of forgotten about pattern matching, because at one point it was supposed to be in 23. And then I asked him, oh, yeah, like, what's the status of that? Like, there was Michael Park's proposal and friends, you know, he's one of the names on it, but there's a bunch of folks that have worked on it. But then there's also the is-as proposal that came. So, like, there's 2 competing proposals, and I actually don't know what. And so it's like you're saying, there's like, you have to keep track of, there's not necessarily just one proposal for a certain feature. There's competing proposals. Well, at some point, those merge, et cetera. It does take up a lot of bandwidth to keep track of that stuff.
I will give an opinion there. I am not a fan of is-as. I think it'll make the language harder to teach.
Really?
Yes. And I think in many ways it comes right back around to my recent rant about implicit conversions, because it's hiding conversions from you. If you say, I want this as this thing, it might be a dynamic cast, it might be a static cast, it might be a reinterpret cast. I don't know. I'll give it to you, sure. Like, doesn't sound good to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's exactly against best practice of being explicit about that.
We should write code that doesn't need cast, not code that has a bunch of fun implicit cast for us.
Yeah. Also, too, I've always wondered, it's been a while since I've never read that paper fully. I just perused it. But like, what is the land grab of is and as? Like, is that even...
It might be context sensitive inside of the pattern matching constructs.
Okay. Something so like yeah, that. It's you can still have, you know, IS or AS as a variable name elsewhere, and it's fine.
I just actually reviewed these two different papers like last week, because I am preparing an episode where I'm going to talk about features that I want coming up in C++. So I had to go back and look at the current paper list. And that, yeah, like you said, the two different competing papers, there's one that has is and as in it, and there's one that doesn't. And the one that doesn't, I think, has a much more readable syntax, personally.
Interesting. Can we get a preview of the list of the itemized list of features, or do people have to wait to they got to go subscribe to the channel?
I would have to pull up my notes, but pattern matching is, I think, strong on there, because I think pattern matching is one of the few things that will change the way the everyday C++, not the library writer, but the everyday C++ user will use the language. I do think I've changed my opinion a few times. I want reflection. Mm-hmm. But I was never considering it to be a priority for the standards committee in my personal queue, because that's something I want. But is it going to make the language easier or harder to teach? Is it going to be something that I will, you know, the C++ applications developer is going to use? And I decided, yeah, ultimately, yes, we do want reflection, if for no other reason than to be able to actually enumerate the values in an enumeration, if for no other reason.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of libraries, macro, you know, hacks for doing that kind of thing. And especially coming from other languages where that's just a utility you can reach for. It's it's crazy the hoops you have to jump through in C++ to make that happen.
Those are the main two things. And then I would say the next thing that I want is to actually remove implicit conversions from the language, which I know is not going to happen, but
I mean, never say never. My personal take is that C++ is at this kind of inflection point right now, and that there's all these projects, languages, whatever you want to call them, popping up, and C++ is going to have to react to this somehow.
Right.
This isn't necessarily a bad thing for C++. This, you know, I think, you know, even I can't remember, I'm going to mess up who said this. It was Chandler or someone else who's working on one of these projects where, like, you know, a possibility is that, you know, we experiment with these things, but at the end of the day, it just ends up improving C++. And that's still considered like a win,
right?
Because at the end of the day, a lot of these projects are motivated by not being able to make, you know, backwards, you know, changes, backwards compatibility breaking changes. And, you know, they had the meeting in Prague where they said, you know, no to making changes, but I don't know. I think something in the next decade is going to happen that enables it, either if it's like a once in 30 years or 50 years kind of thing, or, you know, maybe they reintroduce something like Rust's additions. You know, Vittorio Romeo had that proposal for epochs.
Yeah.
I think something like that is going to have to happen. You know, something is going to change. I don't know what it is, but like, I feel like there's a chance that like requests like turning that off, you know, it's going to be a possibility. Sean was talking about, you know, there is a way to, and the Sean Baxter, not Sean Parent, there is a way to, you know, file by file, like turn on certain features. Like we can do that with, you know, pragma statements. And sure, it creates a proliferation of different styles per file. But like, you know, you can do that, test them out, and then at some point work towards, you know, what Haskell did, where they have a bunch of these extensions. And then for the first time in 20 or 30 years, they basically said, you know, here's a set of extensions that basically everyone's turning on, or like a huge subset of folks that use Haskell are turning on. Let's just add them to Haskell 2021 or whatever they called it. And so now those extensions, you know, ship out of the box. You don't have to go and turn them on. I wouldn't say never. You could get your wish, especially, I mean, you got 22,000 followers. You know, you got...
Oh, yes, I am powerful. Oh, sorry. This is a podcast. I just rolled my eyes at that. To be clear, I do not actually consider myself to be powerful in the community here.
You got close to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. You know, you could cause a movement if you wanted to.
Well, I want to do a live stream soon. And the goal is going to be to write my own cling tidy check that disables implicit conversions as a cling tidy check, just to see what happens. I want to see the fallout of it. I want to try it.
Yeah. I mean, there's another great tool. I saw actually, I think in your talk, it added const to the auto parameter in a range-based for loop.
Yeah.
And that's something I know that cling tidy for a long time was trying to add basically the equivalent in Rust where it lets you know, hey, you've added a mute keyword, You don't need that. You haven't modified or mutated your variable. The opposite is for C++, is adding const whenever you can. Did that get added in the range-based for loop because that clang tidy thing got added, do you know? Or
I think that got added in the range-based for loop just because of the modernized transformation, but I did observe clang tidy just a few days ago, the latest trunk, saying, hey, you can add const here, actually. And I think it was the first time I had seen that outside of the context of a ranged for loop modernized transformation.
I will have to go check that out. That's something I've wanted for... I mean, I went and tracked that issue for a while. Like, it's been out there for 2 or 3 years. Because that's one of the things you've talked about. What was the talk?
C++ code smells?
Yes.
It all comes down to
C++ code smells. Yeah. And I ended up giving a talk called My Least Favorite Anti-Pattern, which I acronymed ITM for initialize, then modify. And then I realized after I was referencing a few people's talks is that I hadn't watched fully C++ code smells. I had just stolen a couple snippets. But then when I watched that talk, I was like, oh, man, like this. I'm basically just giving Jason's talk like with a different flavor and style, because at the end of it, I was basically like const driven development. You just add const to things and like you're going to fix half of the issues of like initializing something and then modifying it. You can just try and program with const and then
make const your default. Yeah.
Yeah. So just go watch Jason's video. You don't have to bother watching mine. I realized I basically given the same talk prepared the same talk accidentally that you have done. And even Kate's given similar talks in that vein. It's not one person came up with this.
Definitely
idea.
Kate and James were some of my inspiration for that, because they gave a talk that said, just take the first value, add const to it and see what breaks and figure out why. And just do that. Just make everything const one line at a time.
Yeah, it's so nice in Rust. Also, I've mentioned probably Rust more times in this recording than I have in like all the other episodes, and that's just because I've been playing around with it on the side. But yeah, the fact that it's built into, it's the default in Rust. It's like most of the times I'm just writing code and I don't ever have to put mute there. Like everything is declarative and const. And also too, Kate and James refers to Kate Gregory and James McNellis,
yes.
I believe, just in case if we have people that aren't in the inner or haven't heard of Kate and James, but they, I mean, James, I'm actually not sure if he has given any C++ talks recently. I know he was a prolific speaker earlier on.
Not a while, no. Not since COVID, I guess, would be my guesstimate. Not since 2020. I mean, that sounds about right. I'm thinking about like when we last had James on CBPcast, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that there's anything to that. I'm just thinking timeline-wise. I think 2019 was approximately the last time that I recall.
Yeah. Yeah, both fantastic speakers. I think they've even given co-talks together where they were co-speakers.
Well, yeah, that's the one that I'm referring to, is where they were with the one where they say to just make things const and work your way down. That was a talk they gave together.
All right. Well, so, I mean, we've gone
a while.
A few minutes past what I had this slotted for. Are there any other hot takes or things you've got?
I don't have hot takes.
No hot takes? Anything, any curious things that, you know, you've been wanting to tell the C++, not that our listeners are all C++ers, but, you know, the C++ community, since not have, I guess you've got Twitter still. So if there's really something, you can just tweet at folks.
I've made my opinions known, and my Twitter follower count has improved for it. Apparently Twitter likes hot takes, so
yeah, it is a little unfortunate that you know, the spice, it's like, I'm not sure if you've heard about the chess drama.
Yes,
but like the fact that, you know, it's not really a great thing. You don't want there to be more cheating and etc. and all this stuff, but like it really seems like chess has kind of leaned into it. Like the individual that was accused was at the US championships. And like, I only know about all this stuff. I don't play chess. I don't know anything about chess. I mean, I know the basic rules, but I know about it because like you see something on YouTube of, oh, you got this now. And I've watched probably now like 5 hours worth of like chess vlogs talking about the drama. And there's, yeah, it's unfortunate that this kind of stuff drives clicks and impressions and views and stuff. It's probably would be better if people were more interested in just the mundane things. But
well, I guess on that note, I will leave what I have to say on this. I have the next, I think it's next 11 episodes of C++ Weekly fully planned out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are going to be leaning towards clickbait.
Perfect.
But it is all about trying to get best practices out there more. That's the goal.
clickbait in the spirit of improving C++ code out in the world, I think that's definitely allowed.
Okay.
All right. Let's replug, because this is like probably episode 3 of 3. Yeah, I'll probably dice this up into 3. So we'll replug all of Jason's, I guess. You can still go listen to the podcast. A lot of that stuff is timeless, especially some of the conversations with, a few folks. It has nothing to do with topical stuff. It's just about C++ best practices. So yeah, go listen to all 349 episodes if you already haven't. Go subscribe to Jason's YouTube channel. Buy his books. If you're a corporation listening to this, as corporations obviously do, hire him to do training. Anything else you want to plug or things you want to say?
I do want to say that my puzzle books are actually designed to be fun, just for the record, and people have actually told me that they are fun. They're not, like, painful C++ puzzles. They are fun C++ puzzles.
Yeah. Haven't you said that I think it's your niece, if I recall correctly, like you had her edit them for you? Or
she was my playtester for my first couple of books, and she knows nothing about programming and nothing about C++. When she learned the rules, she was like, oh, this is good, and got into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, that should be the, on the back cover or on the front cover, not sure how old, but just like non-C++ enjoyer of games.
She was 18, 19, something like that. 18. Yeah.
Yeah. So even non-C++ folks can enjoy them. Links for all of that stuff in the show notes. Cool. Thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully we'll get Rob on. And then maybe at some point, if you guys ever want to have a reunion, you can come on and for old time's sakes,
let us know.
Technically, the podcast is still there. You said the same thing as the new Rustation said, is that, we're retiring for now, but maybe not forever. So there could be a chance. Maybe it'll even just be like, a Christmas special every year or something that Rob and Jason get back together once a year to talk what happened in the last year.
That could be fun.
One can wish. One can hope. All right. Thanks so much, Jason. We'll do this again in the future.
Thanks, Connor.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.